For the first five decades of the 20th century, almost all freight to the mid and north coast regions of New South Wales went by ship or rail. Today, almost all freight movements are by road. What has brought this radical change about?
The thing is about the flexibility of trucks is the rail freight is really either focusing on commodities like sugar and stuff out of Grafton, or it's focusing on Sydney-Brisbane containers and these sorts of products. It doesn't do the local distribution as well as the trucks. And the way that the road network's changed overall in Australia-wide is that very little warehousing goes on these days. And the North Coast is no different than the rest of Australia or the United States. Big supermarkets. The warehousing occurs in the trucks and in the supermarkets. You're getting products going directly from supermarkets, from suppliers or from big distribution centres. The flexibility of road freight does that. And the other thing about freight, there's an awful lot of perishables on the road network. Tomatoes are grown in Bundaberg and eaten in Sydney. So that, of course, the urban population of Sydney has consumed its agricultural areas, and so it's the road networks enable that sort of, the Pacific Highway especially, has enabled that sort of agriculture to occur at those places because the markets now are more accessible. Accessibility on the rail system is nowhere near as good as it is on the road. The rail system's accessibility has remained static probably for a good 70 or 80 years. Well, the accessibility on the road's improved out of sight. I mean, just sitting at Newcastle, the rail system's no faster now than it was in the 30s. It's the road network's 3 hours faster.
Tom Lindsay started in the trucking industry with his brother in Coffs Harbour in 1953.
The 10 years I drove, we started off with 5-tonne trucks with 8-tonne payload, and it took us 12 to 13 hours to Sydney. Today, grossing 43.5 tonne of trucks do it in 6 hours. In those days, the 5-tonne trucks had a 5-speed gearbox with a 2-speed button. The 2-speed was like about a quarter of an extra gear. You could press that button and stay in the same gear without changing the gear lever. And many areas you would change back 3 gears on a flat to go through some of the potholes. It was quite common to have a puncher, at least one puncher every trip.
The volume of traffic has increased, the speed of the traffic has increased, the power of the vehicles. They could go across rough roads faster, across bridges faster. As a result, a lot of these things got damaged. They were damaged because of the dynamic energy that hit those bridges and bad roads at the higher speeds, and that caused pavement destruction. As a result, the road engineering had to be completely rethought to cope with these higher speeds and higher weights.
Bruce Parks is now planning and analysis manager at the RTA's Grafton office.
There's certainly going to be an increase of trucks. The surveys that we've done and the traffic studies that we've carried out have shown that that there's going to be a bleed off from the New England onto the Pacific Highway. As soon as Buller Dealer is open, for instance, it's a saving of around $60 a trip. Even later when Burringbow is constructed and built, that's the section north, there'll even be greater savings. Could be $100.
Kevin Kirkland's father started a local bus company in Nimbin because it was a lot easier to load passengers than bananas. Kevin, continuing in this tradition, took delivery of his first bus in 1945.
It was impossible to bring it up the Pacific Highway because of the sharp corners and the ferries. There are about 5 or 6 ferries to cross, and there's no way in the world you could get a semi-trailer up that highway. So the actual delivery of that semi-trailer bus had to be done by the New England Highway, and that's how it came to this area. In 1959, we started our first long-distance tours from Brisbane. It would take us 3 days to get to Sydney. The experienced driver knew and could read the road like a novel. You knew where the corners were, you knew every corner virtually backwards. In fact, one old lady said to me, "You seem to know every pothole on the road." And I said, "We ought to. We make them all." There was a sort of a feeling of hopelessness about the improvement of the highway. You could see these things were happening, that it was a dangerous road. And you always had this feeling. In fact, one of my friends, before he ever got into a bus and drove, used to cross himself. And this was the attitude, you know, you're a bit like a kamikaze pilot. You never knew because you're only missing other vehicles and trucks and heavy vehicles by anything up to 18 inches or 2 feet in the road width. And sometimes at 100 kilometres an hour, you never knew with human error when your turn would come. And that was the attitude that you used to have. As safe as you'd like to drive and as steady as you'd like to be, you were dependent on the other person for their physical skill and alertness for your survival. It's a bit like, I suppose, in the war, they say if you survive the first 6 months in combat, then you've got a good chance of surviving 6 years. And it's the same thing on the road, that if you survive the first 6 months and you get to know the dangers and you get to be aware, you get a sixth sense, you honestly do. You've got a sixth sense of something is pending, and as a result, you can be forewarned about it. But it's a little bit of comparison, I believe, because in the course of the Vietnam War, we sent 46,000 troops to Vietnam to frontline combat. We killed more on the Pacific Highway in those 11 years. There were 600 deaths on the Pacific Highway, and only about 560 deaths in Vietnam. Everyone called it the killer highway.